running a truly successful business. I mean, whether you're pioneering a SaaS startup in Silicon Valley or you're serving regulars at a family restaurant in the Midwest, it really requires understanding so much more than just that top line revenue number. That revenue figure, we have to call that the sugar rush of business. Feels great, sure, but it can be pure vanity. The actual financial health, the stability, and you know the long-term viability of your company. That's revealed by one single critical measurement, the profit margin. Today, we're doing a deep dive that gives you a shortcut to mastering this indicator. We're going to unpack the three essential types of margins, look at why they should be driving your strategic decisions like every single day, and most importantly, deliver some actionable practical steps for improving them right away. So let's start with a simple mental model. Profit margin is essentially the proportion of every dollar of sales you make that you actually get to keep after paying for all the different layers of costs. It's expressed as a percentage, and it tells you, the owner, exactly how efficiently you are converting that raw sales energy into actual usable profit.
Think of it as the ultimate financial x-ray. It's what separates the hustlers who are, you know, busy but ultimately vulnerable from the builders who are creating these resilient, efficient enterprises. And what's fascinating is that this metric is perhaps more important to your outside stakeholders than your revenue even is.
Really? More than revenue?
Oh, absolutely. For instance, if you're looking for growth, banks scrutinize your margins when they're assessing creditworthiness for a loan. They don't just care if you make sales, they care if those sales are profitable enough to cover the debt. And it's the same story with potential investors. They're looking at margins to gauge your efficiency. How well do you manage your resources?
And, you know, here's one people often overlook. Even your customers are starting to pay attention. We've seen major corporations researching a supplier's profit margins when they're evaluating long-term stability.
Exactly. If your margins are paper thin, you look like a high-risk supplier.
And that can just destroy opportunities for those big enduring partnerships. You have to demonstrate that fundamental financial robustness. Okay, let's unpack this. Why do margins matter? Beyond just being a line item in your accounting. You say they provide actionable intelligence.
That's the perfect phrase for it. Revenue is vanity. Profit is sanity. That's the old saying, and it's true.
So you could be generating, say, millions in sales.
You could be generating substantial sales, a massive top line, and celebrating that success. But if you have razor-thin margins, that business is incredibly fragile. We see this all the time in hyper-competitive e-commerce spaces. They're volume-rich, but profit-poor.
And I assume during a downturn, they're the first to go.
The very first. During inevitable economic downturns, those businesses are the first to suffer because they just lack a buffer. Companies with healthier margins have greater resilience, a much higher survival capability, and the ability to absorb unexpected shocks.
Like a supply chain hiccup or...
A labor rate increase, anything, really, without collapsing into the red.
And this directly connects to growth, right? If I have healthy margins, I can grow on my own terms.
Absolutely. Margins directly impact your ability to invest. When a business owner is considering expansion, you know, a new manufacturing line or opening two more retail branches, strong profit margins allow them to access capital more easily because they just look safer to lenders.
Okay.
But the real power is the ability to self-fund those initiatives. If you're generating, say, 20% net profit, you can reinvest that right back into your growth without taking on crippling debt or, you know, giving away equity. That is a massive strategic advantage.
Wait, that sounds great in theory, but where do most founders trip up when they try to self-fund growth? Is it just too tempting to spend that profit on other things?
It's usually about managing the growth itself. Often, fast growth requires immediate cash. You have to hire people now, buy inventory now, but the revenue from that growth might not arrive for 60 or 90 days.
Ah, the cash flow gap.
That's it. If your underlying margins are weak, that gap creates a cash flow crisis, even if the business is technically profitable on paper. Strong margins help you bridge that gap.
Right. And margins also clarify your competitive standing in the market.
They do. If you are consistently operating below the established industry standard, it forces an honest, immediate reevaluation. Is your pricing too low? Are your cost structures just completely out of whack compared to your competitors?
And what if you're above average?
Well, conversely, if you find your margins are significantly above the industry average, that suggests you have a competitive, moatsome, unique advantage, whether it's superior technology, a stronger brand, or a hyper-efficient supply chain.
Something you need to protect.
And amplify immediately. And finally, for any entrepreneur who is maybe thinking about an exit years down the road, Margins had a huge impact on company valuation.
Because buyers want future profits, not past sales.
Exactly. They pay premium prices for businesses that show consistent, healthy profit margins. It doesn't just maximize the eventual returns for the seller. Honestly, it makes the business sellable in the first place. It gives you financial optionality.
Okay, let's talk mechanics. Not all profit is calculated the same way, and this is where clarity is just. It's crucial. We need to introduce the three distinct types of margins. Each one is like a different filter on your revenue.
This is the foundation of financial literacy for any business owner. You have to know which filter you're looking through.
First up, the gross profit margin, or GPM. This is the widest, most immediate filter. GPM is calculated as your revenue minus only the direct costs of producing your goods or delivering your service.
We call those direct costs the cost of goods sold, or COGS.
And critically, GPM excludes overhead. So no rent, no marketing, no admin salaries.
The calculation is straightforward. It's just your gross profit divided by your revenue times 100. Let's use an example. Imagine you run a high-end coffee roasting company. Your revenue is what you sell the roasted bag for. Your COGS would include the raw cost of the green beans, the direct labor for roasting, the cost of the bag and the label, and the direct utilities for that roasting machine.
So it isolates the efficiency of just the production process.
Immediately. If your GPM drops from 60% to 50% overnight, it's a huge alarm bell. It's signaling something immediate, either material costs, so the beans have gone up, or your production line has become incredibly inefficient. Maybe you're wasting beans.
So for that coffee roaster, GPM is a great tool for optimizing their product mix. They can see that selling bags of coffee has a 60% GPM, but maybe selling a simple black coffee in-store, which has less direct material cost, has an 80% GPM.
Precisely. It helps them decide where to focus their marketing. And for service firms, GPM tells you if your billable rates adequately cover the direct labor costs of delivering that service.
So if a consultant bills out at $200 an hour, but their labor costs $150.
Your GPM is terrible. You need to adjust your pricing structure fast.
Now we move a layer deeper. We open the door to the rest of the building, the lights, the rent, the management team. This brings us to the operating profit margin, or OPM.
Right. This metric includes those GPM costs plus all the regular operating expenses, selling expenses, general administrative costs, depreciation, all the recurring costs needed to run the day-to-day business.
And the calculation here.
It's your operating income, often called EBIT, for earnings before interest and taxes divided by revenue. The only things excluded are interest expenses and income taxes. Those are generally seen as outside the control of the operational management team.
I see why this is so valuable. OPM reveals the pure, unvarnished profitability of your core operations. It strips away the noise from financing decisions and, you know, complex tax strategies.
That distinction is incredibly useful, especially when you're comparing businesses in the same industry that have different financial structures.
Give me an example.
Imagine two massive trucking companies. Company A owns its entire fleet. So it has high depreciation expenses, but zero lease payments. Company B leases everything, so it has high monthly lease payments, which count as operating expenses.
Okay, wait, but if Company B is paying leases and Company A is depreciating assets, doesn't OPM make it easier to compare their fundamental business models?
That's where the EBIT comes in.
Hmm.
OPM isolates the performance of the core shipping business, the efficiency of the routes, the fuel consumption, the driver wages from those big capital decisions. It gives investors a real apples-to-apples view of operational performance before debt and tax strategies muddy the water.
Got it. And finally, we arrive at the net profit margin, or NPM.
Yeah.
This is the ultimate bottom line.
This is the one. It accounts for every single expense, interest payments, taxes, any one-time charges like a major legal settlement or an asset write-down, everything.
The formula is net income divided by revenue times 100.
Yep. For small business owners, this figure answers the most fundamental question. After paying everyone and everything, how much money does the business actually make? This is the percentage that determines owner compensation, shareholder dividends, or the retained earnings you have left for reinvestment.
So the net margin is really the final paycheck of the business itself. It's what's left after the entire machine has been run.
Exactly. And you should be tracking both OPM and NPM at the same time. If your OPM is stable at, say, 15%, but your NPM suddenly drops to 5%, you know the problem isn't operational.
It's an external factor.
Right. like a sudden tax rate change, a major increase in interest rates on your debt, or a huge one-off expense. This stops you from trying to fix an inventory problem when the real issue is with the bank.
Okay, now that we know the three types, we need context. Because what makes a good profit margin is entirely context-specific. You can't compare a software firm's NPM to a restaurant's.
No, and the difference is staggering. It reflects the core economic model of that business. If you ignore these benchmarks, you can easily panic when you don't need to, or, even worse, feel comfortable when you should be really worried.
Let's talk about the unique economics of technology and software. They sell code, which costs almost nothing to replicate once it's built. So they have sky-high GPMs.
Oh, yeah. Frequently exceeding 70 or even 80%. The marginal cost for delivering a digital product is basically zero.
But then you look down at their net profit margins.
And they typically settle in the 15 to 25% range for profitable firms. The revenue is largely pure profit at the gross level, but those firms spend massive amounts of capital on upfront development, research, and those ongoing expenses for high-priced engineering talent.
So their costs are weighted heavily toward R&D and payroll.
Right, which drags down the OPM and the NPM.
Then you look at traditional retail and e-commerce, hyper-competitive, dealing with physical goods. Their GPM is often between 25 and 40%.
And their NPM rarely exceeds 5 to 10%. The reason is those massive structural operating costs, physical rent, high volumes of inventory that need storage, returns processing, shipping logistics, and just constant expensive marketing to keep the machine running.
The profit is always being chipped away.
Always. Then you have food service and restaurants, a constant, brutal challenge. They actually get surprisingly good gross margins.
Really?
60 to 70% on food sales and beverages, because the ingredients are cheap, often exceed 80%. On paper, that looks healthy.
That's not the whole story.
But wait for the net margin reality check. Because of massive operating expenses, especially labor, high rent for good locations, and utilities, which have all risen sharply, the NPM typically ranges from a very tight 3 to 5%, and that's for a successful operation.
Wow.
I remember working with a local bakery that was crushing sales, but when we looked at their NPM, it was 2.5%. They were basically running a very busy, high-stress, low-return operation, working for the utility company and their landlord.
That's a sobering anecdote. On the flip side, you have professional services consulting, legal accounting, which are knowledge-based.
Right, so they often have very attractive margins because their primary input cost is just high-value human time. Their GPMs often sit between 50 and 70%.
Because the COGS is just the salary and benefits of the direct service provider.
Exactly. And because they often don't have large inventory or physical infrastructure costs, a well-managed professional firm might achieve net margins of 20 to 30% or even higher.
So the key takeaway here is context.
The key takeaway, you see, is always to compare your margins against industry-specific benchmarks. Don't compare your small manufacturing company to Google. Use resources like the Risk Management Association data and always consider your business maturity stage. A cash-burning, high-growth startup needs to be judged differently than a stable, mature company aiming for 15% NPM.
So we have the definitions and we have the context. If I'm running a small business, where do I actually start? What does this all mean for day-to-day decisions? Let's focus on the practical path to improvement, and let's split it into two areas. Revenue and efficiency, starting with revenue enhancement. The single fastest way to improve margins, assuming you keep your customers, is through pricing discipline. This is the area most small businesses just fail at. They underprice their offerings out of fear.
It's a self-defeating cycle. A 10% price increase, if you lose zero customers, flows almost entirely to your net margin. A 10% increase in volume, though, requires more materials, more labor, more stress. Pricing is the low-hanging fruit.
What's another strategy?
You should also seriously consider value-based pricing, especially in professional services or high-end manufacturing. Stop basing your price on what it costs you to make it. Base your price on the financial value you deliver to the customer. This approach can support dramatically higher margins.
And here is a subtle tactic I like. Strategic surcharges. Implement these for customization, for special requests, or for rush orders. Not only does this improve your margin on those non-standard sales,
it also encourages customers to pick your standard, more efficient offerings, which streamlines your whole operation.
Exactly. Now let's turn to the operational efficiency side. This is where the biggest ongoing impact often lies.
A systematic cost review is critical. We're talking about ruthless cost control. When was the last time you actually canceled unused software subscriptions? When did you try to renegotiate your vendor contracts? These seemingly small savings compound so quickly throughout the year.
And the largest expense for many service businesses by far is labor. Optimization here is essential.
Absolutely. Focus on cross-training employees to improve flexibility so you aren't just paying overtime when one person is out. And more importantly, invest in technology that enhances employee efficiency and productivity. Let the same number of staff do significantly more work.
And finally, process improvements.
If you sell physical goods, invest in quality inventory management systems. Reduce carrying costs, minimize obsolescence, don't let products expire on the shelf, and standardization is key. Customization and one-off projects create immense operational complexity and margin pressure. Standardize your products and services wherever you can to gain true efficiency.
Before we wrap up, we absolutely must address the common calculation mistake that trips up, I'd say, 90% of small business owners.
Yes.
Never confuse markup with margin. This misunderstanding can distort your entire financial picture.
This is a friendly but crucial warning. Markup is the percentage you add to your cost to determine the price. Margin is a percentage of the final price that remains as profit.
Let's break it down with simple math. If a product costs you $10 to make and you add a 50% markup, the selling price is $15.
Right, but what is your margin?
Your profit is $5.
And $5 is only one-third, or 33.3%, of the selling price of $15. If you believe your 50% markup equals a 50% margin, you are wildly overestimating your true profitability.
And that miscalculation scaled across a year of sales.
It's often the difference between success and failure. You have to be calculating margin relative to that final price.
So we've walked through the key distinctions: gross margin for production efficiency, operating margin for core operational health, and net margin for the true final bottom line. And we've seen the massive differences across industries, from the high GPMs of tech to the brutally tight MPMs of the restaurant industry.
And remember, knowledge is most valuable when it's understood and applied. While strong margins are critical, we have to reinforce the distinction between profit and cash flow one last time.
Strong margins mean little if cash flow problems threaten viability.
So many profitable businesses actually fail because of cash crunches, particularly during rapid growth spurts when they're waiting 60 days for a payment to arrive, but they have to pay their employees today.
So what's a good rule of thumb?
A best practice is maintaining at least 3 to 6 months of operating expenses in liquid reserves, just to handle those seasonal fluctuations or unexpected expenses. Don't confuse paper profit with usable cash.
That's essential guidance. And here is a final provocative thought for you to consider this week. The businesses that thrive long-term, they embed margin management into their organizational culture, into their daily decision-making processes. It's not just an accounting exercise they run once a year. So your challenge, based on this deep dive, is to stop looking at your single, aggregate, company-wide net margin number. Start calculating your margins at granular levels, product-specific, service-specific, or even customer-specific, to uncover the underperforming areas that are currently being hidden by those large, rosy aggregate numbers. That granular analysis is what separates the merely profitable from the truly optimized.